Just what did Jesus have in mind when he said to his followers these famous words, "Follow me"? Hello, welcome to Good Word. I'm David Thomas, your host once again. We have been together, so to speak, now. This is the 11th week. We're coming through a long period of discussion about restoration. The foundational idea is that the world is not the way it was in the beginning, that we lost our pristine place and nature because of sin, but that God has throughout history been working toward restoration, and we're coming down to the last couple of weeks where we talk about this. I'm happy to have as conversation partners again Daryl Bigger and Brant Berglund, two colleagues from the School of Theology. And Brant and Daryl, here this question that I asked is built off of the comment that Jesus, after he had won their confidence, after he mingled with them, after he had helped and worked with them, he said to them, and here this is King James English, he bade them, "Follow me." What does that look like?
Well, first of all, it was a literal call to go with him. And we find that Peter and Andrew and James and John left their nets, and Matthew left his tax collector booth, and they literally began to follow him around.
I'm intrigued with that, too. That Jesus intended a disruption in their lives. This was a shift for them.
See, and I mean, it's one thing to think about following Jesus in his day. Of course, my next question is going to be, what does it mean to follow him now?
And how does one become a disciple when there isn't a visible, literal person to follow and emulate and listen to, teach? And
see, I don't want it to escape us the fact that the ultimate goal in Jesus' interactions with people was to come to this invitation, okay? Because the process of restoration, and what does that actually consist of? What does this restoration involve? What is a restored person supposed to look like? Mm-hmm. And you know, as we come to the end of this quarter, I think that these become important questions. All the things we've talked about, God active in history, working toward restoration, results in something, and the invitation from Jesus is, "Follow me." What am I going to look like if I follow him? How would you know that I was following him?
One of the analogies is that of the shepherd and the sheep. And the sheep, in this case, start to look more like the shepherd, but they're supposed to go out and make other disciples as well. So we're passing on something that we get from someone else.
Mm-hmm. And I'm struck with what the disciples did shortly after Jesus was gone. They were back doing what they were doing before, which suggests to me that it didn't mean that you have to quit doing everything that occupies you now, that earning a living, that maintaining family life, those connections to your community are all feasible as part of being good followers.
You know, I was thinking about this in a little bit different way, is that it seems to me that the first thing that this invitation does is it presumes or it engenders an internal change. Okay? Mm-hmm. What is that internal change? What is it that happens in a person inside of them when they decide to take up the invitation or respond to the invitation, "Follow me"? Can we talk about that a little bit?
Maybe I'm going to be more broad than you intended, but for me, it is not so much a changing of every activity as it is the motivation. What's the reason for this? The purpose of life becomes quite different.
Yes,
now.
Yes. I find that experience with Peter here in Luke chapter 5 when Jesus calls Peter and Andrew and James and John, and they're having a fishing problem, and Jesus tells them to catch some fish another way, and they do. Mm-hmm. It says that Peter comes to Jesus, he falls down at his feet and tells him to leave. Mm-hmm. Hey, go from me. I'm a sinful man. I can't be in your presence. And yet Peter is drawn to Jesus to say those words, "Go from me."
And Daryl, to go back to what you said, you thought maybe I would be looking at something a little more precise. Indeed, in my mind I was. Uh-huh. That it seems to me that one of the key ingredients here is the surrender of personal autonomy. And this freaks people out. Not you don't surrender the right to be an individual or to be autonomous, but you adopt a deferential attitude toward Christ and his requirements, and you orient yourself to those instead of orienting it to your own agenda. Mm-hmm. That, I think, is another way of talking about what Christians have referred to as a conversion. It's a turning around of a person's life so that you're not living an autonomous existence, mm-hmm. but you're now living a collaborative and even dependent one. And I don't like the word dependent because, you know, I've met too many people who either the devil did it or God did it, and they seem to have no place for themselves.
They're not culpable at all.
Yeah. I don't buy that because, you know, there's too much evidence in the Bible that the power to choose is very dear to God, and he never takes that from us. So, but I think that's one thing that happens, is that I no longer want to continue an autonomous existence. I want to continue in a collaborative and even dependent one where my work is to merge my will with what I understand the will of God to be. And if you've never tried to do that, I'm just going to warn you that it's a very challenging thing to do. Okay, I have a friend who was telling a story to children in church one day, and he came with a yield sign. I didn't ask him where he got that from because they don't exactly ride around, you know. But I'll never forget him telling the children, "This is my favorite traffic sign." He says, "Because a stop sign, I have no choice. With a left turn, I mean, whatever it is." But he says, "This one, I am allowed to use my discretionary powers. I get to do an evaluation, and I decide yes, no, maybe so." And he said, "When I read in the Bible that I should yield," he says, I see that in terms of right of way. I give God the right of way in life, and I follow behind. I don't cut it off. So I would list that as one of the key elements in transformation. And then I would list another one as the awakening of conscience. I know when I was working in a direct pastoral capacity years ago, I would always look for that. I think that the awakening of conscience is a sign that a person has made peace with God. You know, we tend to dull our consciences, but when you actually reorient yourself to God and you invite him into your life, your conscience wakes up again, and it can be very keen. And I could tell a number of stories about that, but I probably shouldn't in the interest of time. Well, I'll tell one very briefly, that a man who ended up returning a beer mug that cost $1.50, he drove 20 miles to return it because his conscience bothered him. And at first he dismissed it and said, "Well, that's ridiculous." But the second time it happened, he realized that there would be no peace of mind unless he went and did that. And, of course, surprised the proprietor of the other place quite dramatically. He walked in and said, "Well, I took this about 4 years ago," and he says, "but I've become a Christian and I'm returning it." And they almost dropped the whole tray on the ground. They were so surprised by that. But I wish I could have talked to the owner of that establishment after that event, see? And we say that's a little thing, but it's a big thing. I think also that there comes a great desire to learn about God when people open their lives to God. And so I think those are elements of transformation that I think joy and peace come into people's lives, see? And so you have those internal components that bring about transformation. Another thing I think that happens is that the what we used to call the graces, Christian graces, emerge. You become joyous, loving, truthful. I mean, I remember talking to somebody who went through an aggravating circumstance, and when that was over, he turned to me and he said, "It's a good thing I have come to faith, because a few years ago I would have knocked that guy on the ground." That would have been
so the fruit of the spirit then becomes evidence that something is happening
but
in the life.
But it grows up in you. You're not there. You're surprised that it's actually there.
Sure.
You know, where did it come from? Well, it came from this inner transformation, see. So, I mean, those are the things I was talking about, mm-hmm. and that's not to diminish what mm-hmm. you were saying. It's just that I think that sometimes when Jesus said, "Come follow me," it means if you do, there's going to come a transformational work inside of you, which will then show up outside. And maybe we should – how is it going to show up outside? What are you going to see?
I like the story in John 13 where Jesus washes his disciples' feet and says, "See, I've left for you an example that you ought to do as I have done." And while some churches, including my own faith tradition, still practice a ritual foot washing, the deeper message is one of service. And that's kind of what we've been talking about all through this quarter so far, is that Jesus left a model of transforming society by doing good for people. And that should manifest itself in the Christian experience.
Yeah.
So that personal effort and energy is not devoted for one's own sake,
right,
but on behalf of others.
Yeah.
So you become a successful professional or a businessman or a laborer or a whatever you are for the sake of what that does for other people. You invest in the community.
Yeah, you're not all about yourself anymore.
Mm-hmm.
No.
It may even change. I have seen young people whose majors have changed based on an experience with God. Mm-hmm. They said, I was headed down a path that I wanted money. Now I'm headed in a path of service. And mm-hmm. That's very practical.
I would like to think that humility becomes a characteristic as well.
Mm.
And patience. Patience is a fascinating thing. I warn people, don't ask for patience, because it's only learned by persevering through difficult and aggravating circumstances. So come and follow me. I think I want to end here, as we come to an end here today, with the – and Brent, you like the book of Revelation a lot, Revelation 3:20, which has been put in famous painting where Jesus is standing at a door knocking, and the point is made that there's no handle on the outside of the door.
The freedom of choice to invite him in.
There's only one on the inside.
That's right.
Yeah. And the fact that God does not force himself on people, I think, is very significant. I also want to throw something else in here. A very challenging verse is, seek the Lord with all your heart, and you will find him when you seek him with all your heart. What would that look like? And why are people so reluctant to do that? Those are questions that linger in my mind, you know, that we have this bent toward ourselves, that any time anybody wants to interrupt it, we get very agitated. At the risk of saying too much, I want to throw in a word also for telling people about your experience, not in a way that drives them nuts, but I like reading about the Methodist revivals and notice that a lot of the power in those came from storytelling, people telling what happened in their lives when they invited God's presence.
The personal testimony.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's the traditional phrase that you bring out there, Brent. I like the idea that when an opportunity affords itself, you should, to use the old term, testify.
Sure. And that's in the tradition of the earliest disciples who said, we're witnesses of the things that Jesus did when we were here.
Yeah.
And they cannot help but tell what they've seen. Mm-hmm. So I hope that becomes the experience of people on an ongoing basis.
Mm.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. We are indeed hasting on toward the end of this quarter when the lessons will shift, but thank you for your participation today. My thanks to David Olson, our engineer, and my thanks to you for listening to The Good Word. For The Good Word, I'm Dave Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.